Why have I quit my job? Why have I, you know, bought a van? And why am I going to drive around the country? Well, I'm passionate about the idea that you need to be heard. And I want to stitch these stories together across the states. We're going to find the commonalities. And it's going to be really an amazing experience. And I look forward to you joining me on the job.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Mental Health Today. It's your host, Ken Stearns, and I'm in California, Southern California this week, kind of preparing for a journey to Northern California on Monday. We are going to be live. This show will be live from the Future of Employee Mental Health conference. It's going to be live again on Monday and all the way to Thursday, actually, with the future of mental health for just as a more kind of broader encompassing piece. And so we're taking the show live. We'll be interviewing VIPs, speakers, sponsors, et cetera, right at the show. So super excited about that. Look for a big, crazy blast of live shows next week as we're coming to you from the show. But between now and then, we've got our next guest, Doug Finkelstein. And thanks for being a guest, Doug. I really appreciate you stepping out of the workday and chatting with the audience.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Ken. I'm excited to be here and looking forward to those live shows. Those are always fun.
Yeah, it is going to be kind of interesting getting a speaker that comes right off the stage, you know, or somebody about to go on the stage and just get them for about 20 minutes and just get an idea of what you're going to talk about and why and, you know, how you think it's going to impact what message you want to get across.
The post game.
It's like a post-game thing. It'll be really a different interview, a different style for me and a different style for the show. And I think add a lot of value to the conference and the organizers for ability to capture some, you know, good messages that they can use to repeat and kind of, you know, show what they did over the week. How did you get into mental health, Doug? What are you doing in this space? How did that, because we all have a story.
Yeah, great question. So my journey started when I was 13 years old. I grew up in Orange County, New York. And when people hear Orange County, they think of the Orange County, California, and it could not be more opposite. This is farmland upstate New York. We have the same name though. And when I was 13, I started taking Propecia. It's this chronic hair loss medication. And I was very self-conscious about my hairline. And through a family friend who was able to prescribe this, I got on this pill. And as a 13-year-old, I wasn't really made aware of the side effects. So I'm like, oh, of course. Like, I get to keep my hair by just taking this little candy. Like, why not? That's not what happened. So it may have helped me keep my hair, but the side effects were not good. And there were mental side effects. There were physical side effects. And I was on this for 10 years until I was 23 years old. And
wow!
Throughout that time, I knew that it was causing these side effects, but I, you know, risk stop taking it and maybe my hair falls out the next day. And
yeah.
As you know, a college student and in my young 20s, I was working in finance in New York City. I wasn't willing to risk that. So I put up with the side effects. And that was until I came across a community online of other people that were taking or had taken this drug Propecia, and oh my God, they were sharing horror stories. And
reading
the worst ones, I'll share it here. I don't know how R-rated this podcast gets, but one of the worst the worst I heard from multiple people was losing the ability to feel pleasure from orgasm permanently, even when you stop taking the medication. And once I saw that, I said, what's the point of even having hair? If, you know, one of the joys of
life, what's the point of because the whole point of having hair is to find yourself in a situation where you can do that.
Yes. So
when you get there and there's nothing.
Exactly. Yeah. So I saw that and that really made it set in that, you know, what's the point of having hair if I'm not going to enjoy my life?
And yes,
I quit taking the medication cold turkey. About 6 months later, I got into meditation, and those two things I really credit with starting me on this path. So that opened me up to being more present in my relationships and more energetic and really myself, which I hadn't been for the previous 10 years on this drug. And eventually it led to psychedelics and specifically mushrooms, psilocybin, when I was 25 years old. And I more or less had the opinion government and media give, you know, it's for hippies and you're going to jump out of a building if you even think about this stuff. And I knew that was nonsense. So I did my own research and I found some information online that I eventually felt comfortable enough to have my own first experience. And that wasn't easy because the websites that talk about this stuff generally look like they were made by a 12-year-old in the 80s. They're very dark webby and and you don't know who's talking and what they're talking about.
Yes.
Eventually found enough, felt comfortable, had my first experience. And that was wonderful. It felt like returning home. It just immediately, it had a massive impact on me. And pretty soon after that, realized I didn't want to work in finance anymore, which is not a surprising revelation to come from that experience.
to come out of a really powerful psychedelic experience to reassess your work and what you do. Yes.
Yes, absolutely. And yeah, it happened to me. It happens to many people. And that is the time I decided to kind of recalibrate and figure out what I wanted to do next. I moved out to Los Angeles, where I am now. I'm actually in Redondo Beach, so I think we're pretty close.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And I went to UCLA. I got my MBA there. And it's a two-year program. I figured that will kind of help me figure out what's out there and what I want to do next. And during this time, during school and leading up to it, I was going on psychedelic journeys every 4 months or so for my personal mental health. And that's kind of the rough time period I've found that I'm due for that reset, that refocusing, reorientation on my path. And I realized after doing a handful of these, I was always looking forward to the next one, talking with my friends about the previous one. It was really just such a valuable thing in my life. And my friends, some of them, yes, some of them, no, but none of them really wanted to have the amount of conversations around it that I wanted to. So I'm figuring that surely there's other people out there that this is as important to them as it is to me. And if they're like me, maybe they don't have that network and that support system and that community that they can talk to about this. So that's where I got the idea to start a community for this. And Empathic is the name of it. And we started as a private member only community. And it was a place to share stories, perspective, advice, resources, really anything around spirituality, psychedelics, and have people to connect with and really figure out what's next for you as, you know, your own unique individual. With the guidance of people that may have been there and done that or are also thinking about it, and really creating a space that, you know, doesn't look like it was made in the 80s. It's really above board. It's real people. You know, you're talking to a real face. So we did that. We launched in 2021. So a little over 2.5 years ago at this point. And from that community evolved the nonprofit that is an empathic society. And that's the URL you see here, empathic.love. Okay. And what the nonprofit does is help organizations, whether they be retreats or psychedelic societies or other nonprofits, to further their integration practice for the people that they serve. And that can take on a variety.
Yeah, what does that mean?
Yeah, great question. So integration, I really call it all of the time that we're not using psychedelic substances, the other 99.9%. So if you're familiar with this space, you know that almost all the money is going toward making compounds or, you know, a retreat where you're at a place doing the medicine. There's very little money, time, effort being put on the other 99.9% of our time, which is how we integrating, how we bringing in what happened on that 6-hour journey. Yes. Into the other 24/7 of our life. Yeah. So that's what we're really focusing to help organizations and people and groups be able to put more time, attention, focus into that other 99.9%.
Yeah, that does. That actually lines up with a conversation I had recently with a guest, and they were talking. This was the really one of their points was the a lot of this, you know, the leading up to it, the intentionality. So that almost everybody I've talked to, that's been very obvious when you go, when you, you know, how you do it and everything. But one thing that missed that I didn't realize until just, you know, you and this other person was that after part. Because you go in with all these intentions, you got, and then you come out of it, and you should be creating some way to integrate that into your life, right? What you saw, what you asked for, what you know, or you need to explore more and or prepare for your next journey, I guess.
100%, and it's commonly said, and I agree that you know the psychedelics themselves aren't the magic bullet; they're not the solution. They're a tool in the toolkit.
Yes.
And, yeah. Most likely you're going to have a realization, epiphany, insights, connections of things in your life that you didn't realize. And it's, you know, you're most likely not going to act on them while still on the substance that you're on. The goal is how can I take all of these insights and then live them in my day-to-day life? And that's where we see really a lack of attention is, yeah. How do you do that? And there's no right answer, which makes it very difficult to do. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't try. So that's really what we're trying to do is help really everyone find the ways for them to keep this presence in their life, to keep that 6-hour journey or 1-week retreat or ketamine session, the impact from it forever, and not just, you know, that day or that week.
Yeah, I love what you said about saying, you know, it's not the it's not a magic mushroom in that way. It doesn't just fix you. You know, you don't take it and it's a compound and, you know, boom, you're happy. No, it does take you. I love seeing something, getting a bit of information and taking action on it, or at least waking up with a note coming the next day and waking up and going, okay, was that something or not something? You know, it's something, is it something I should actionable? Is it actionable? What is it? What are your, how do you find people? How have you found people to come to the society?
Yeah, purely word of mouth. So we don't do any advertising, marketing, anything like that. We just make something that helps people. And we know that if we're doing it well, then, you know, they'll tell their people and the network will grow that way. So all of our partners and people within the community have come from other people.
Oh, that is interesting. Is it mostly individuals, or are there also people who help guide? Are there guides is there as well? What's kind of the makeup?
Yeah, the community is individuals. The nonprofit. So I'll distinguish between those two. Okay. The nonprofit and Empathic Society is a nonprofit that works and consults with other established organizations, groups, psychedelic societies, yoga retreats, other nonprofits to provide them with integration tools, resources, whatever the next step might be. We, you know, it's very individualized. So we meet and we just ask them what they're hoping to accomplish and then see what ways we can get there. So that's the nonprofit. And then the community side of it is still a private membership community. So then the nonprofit kind of was birthed from the community, and they're two distinct organizations.
Okay. What about some people that I'm talking to in this part of the space are also trying to help, they're setting up opportunities or some vehicle to help finance people, because, you know, there's another question I had that popped up as well, because it was from before I wanted to ask this. Do you think you'll be able to connect some of these groups to be able to create a fund somewhere for people who want to go on the journey, but it's very expensive, as with a coach, with an individual therapist? And then you had mentioned something before about possibly group, kind of a group thing. Or coaching through Facebook, you know, coaching through, you know, maybe you can help somebody online when they're doing their own medication. If they've been on it once or twice, they only need somebody online maybe to help guide them in and out. So yeah, those two things. Are you looking at any funding for helping people from that side? And then, you know, this group thing or individual, what are you kind of seeing on the execution side? How do we get it to the mass? I guess the question is, how are we getting this to the masses?
Yeah, great question. So on the funding side, there are a few organizations that are already doing that. It's not something that we do as a focus, but we work with those organizations to help them out with their integration side. So two examples of that are Psychedelic Access Fund, PAF, and Thank You Life. Okay. And they both help people getting ketamine-assisted therapy to be able to, they help with their finances to be able to, to do that. And I actually just, funny enough, today was talking with Thank You Life, and we're partnering with them to help them on their next step of their integration. So they're doing integration circles for their community. And we had some talks about what it might look like to help provide facilitators for more one-on-one sessions, if that's something their people are looking for. Okay. They also have a group of veterans that are going to be going through ketamine-assisted therapy. And one of our other partners is Heroic Hearts Project, who bring veterans to ayahuasca retreats in the jungle. And we are helping Heroic Hearts Project set up their online community for their vets. So we're going to make a possible connection there between Thank You Life and Heroic Hearts to have their veteran groups meet each other and have that shared support of the veteran community and psychedelic therapy.
Oh, that's great. What a great link. I made a note. I'm going to go through my guests and try to find some of these that were kind of floating around on the fringes a little bit. They're not as advanced, not as far along as you are.
I'd love to meet them.
I mean, it's like they could just jump in and absolutely, maybe what you've built is already what they're dreaming of building, and they can just, you know, throw their effort in behind you. I'll go through some of my guests. There's quite a few people I think I should send your way to, just at least for a conversation.
Please do. I love the connections.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you go to any conferences? Give me your take on, cause it's a really, this is the funniest thing I think for me right now is, let's face it, mental health conferences, probably like the last thing you'd be excited to get on a plane for a lot of people on a Monday morning or a Thursday night to go for the weekend to go, I'm going to a mental health conference, you know, let's face it though. It's because even the branding and the marketing, and it's tough conversations. These are heavy topics, takes a lot. And then all of a sudden you got the psychedelics conference, you know, and they got DJs, they got, you know, yoga sessions, they have parties after photo booth. They just make it into one big party. It's still about mental health, but it's just a very different way to play with it. And also because they're on the psychedelic side. Anyway, I'm just curious your take on the new fad, and this seems to be a lot of them, and they look very professional.
Yeah, it definitely is popping up everywhere. So we did have a booth, the nonprofit, at the MAPS conference in Denver.
Okay,
the massive one.
Okay,
it was 11,000 plus people, and it was incredibly well done. They had everyone there. They talked about every topic. They were, in my opinion, very considerate of all angles of the conversation. Mm. And it's funny, like they had a dog petting room, they had a meditation room, all these things that, you know, like sound ridiculous, but then also you go to them in the middle of the conference, you're like, wow, I really needed this. Like, I'm very happy that this was here and every conference should have it.
Dog petting? That is like genius, right? Yeah.
Underrated part of the conference.
Highly underrated.
Yeah. So they did an excellent job. And then there are other conferences that, now I don't know how, but I'm getting targeted ads for this one conference in LA in a couple months that I don't know what I clicked on to get on their list. It really seems like, you know, a money grab. It seems like, you know, they see this new industry, they see an opportunity to host an event and charge a bunch for tickets and people will go. If it provides value for people, awesome. It's not something that really appeals to me. I think there's a wide range, like in any industry, of the quality of conference. And maybe that's a good thing that, you know, psychedelics is headed toward industry is not the term I would want to use here, but the ecosystem's developing in a way that there's enough interest that things like this are popping up. And now whether or not they should is probably a discussion more meant for capitalism than for this conversation. But maybe it's a good sign that it's getting the respect and time of day that it deserves.
Yeah. We're not quite at peak LSD season, but I feel the peak is coming. Probably the fall of next year, I think, will be the mat. Will be when every conference it could be, because it'll be San Francisco, LA. You've got the Denver one, Matt, wherever maps. I think they maybe stay in Denver, or do they move it around?
I think they're staying in Denver every other year. And
yeah,
I think next year is when we'll start to get some FDA approvals as well. MDMA being first, I think. So that's a pretty good guess on the timeline.
Although this morning, the FDA, was it FDA? Announced that they said that ketamine is not really possibly safe for they had some very, it was a very negative outlook. I don't know what that would have.
I did see that. My first impression is the providers that are helping people with ketamine assisted therapy have a better understanding themselves than the government organization that is the FDA of who they're helping and what risks they've seen in their own practice. I'm hoping it won't really affect the people that are getting help with that medicine.
And it seemed like a fairly reckless press release, because there's so many studies that have come out recently and coming out, like literally there's a pipeline of stuff coming out about how positive it is. And then the FDA comes out and says, yeah, actually it doesn't work. And didn't cite anything.
it's a mystery, and honestly, it's no longer surprising at this point. But it's
still a mystery what kind of game. Either it's either just regular bureaucratic incompetence, which I would say 99%, or it's some sort of genius move to you know, make the market panic in some weird way and make somebody disinvest or somebody reinvest, or, you know, it's on another level.
Yeah.
I'm just going for bureaucratic mismanagement there. Just the left hand doesn't know what the right hand's doing.
Right.
It's a problem with 20-year-old Twitter interns. Gotta be careful who you let have your Twitter handle.
That's right. Let AI handle it.
Yeah, you know what? Probably let, because AI would go and check and say, hey, before we release this, we should check to see we should quote a study.
Yeah, this information is actually not scientifically backed. But then Twitter would be like, that's exactly what we love on Twitter, not scientifically backed. So fire.
I'm surprised it wasn't, maybe it should get community noted. There's our community notes on Twitter. I would be surprised if somebody in the ketamine ketamine industry doesn't jump on that and try to correct it. I'm sure there's panic. It's not a very nice thing to drop out in the middle of the day.
Right.
Empathic love. Please, I'm trying to make that harder. Empathic love, empathic.love. And that's the foundation.
Yeah. Empathic.love is our URL, and Empathic Society is the name of the nonprofit. Okay. I'd say 90% of people call it empathetic. So not to be discouraged by the mispronunciation.
Yeah, it took me easier
for people.
you should definitely capture both on the website. Like, you should buy the other URL.
Yeah, we have it.
In case people mistype, if they type it wrong, let them still find it without too much trouble.
Right.
What's next? You've kind of, your 2.5 years, kind of interesting. I mean, you wouldn't have thought, it's always hard to imagine what things are going to become. And obviously from your conversation, you're a bit surprised where you ended up. What are you thinking about now? What are the partners? Who's coming? You know, where's the universe dragging you?
Yeah. I love talking about what's next. It really is helping other groups that are doing what they do and just don't have the resources put toward whatever's next in their integration to help them do that. And I mentioned, it's kind of, it's all that's really the one of the most fun parts for me is it's so different for each group, whether it's helping Heroic Hearts build a digital community or Thank You Life to connect their people with each other and with one-on-one facilitators. There's, you know, there's all different types of ways to integrate, and it really depends on, you know, each organization's unique situation. So moving forward, it's really just getting in touch with organizations that are servicing people and taking a look at how they're doing that outside of their core activity and lifting that up so that their core activity might be come to our retreat in Peru and do ayahuasca for a week. But really, that's not what people are signing up for. It's, you know, everything's connected, right? So if we can turn that come to Peru for a week and do ayahuasca to by joining our organization as a member, you get a week in Peru, but you also get, you know, every week for the next year, a chance to meet with other people on the same path and talk about the experience and do breath work with them or learn more about yoga, then, you know, suddenly this 1 week experience becomes a year long experience where it's still alive every week because you're, you're keeping the intention, the energy of this commitment to yourself to heal alive past that 1 week experience. So that's really what we're doing.
Yeah, and you're making it part of your life. I mean, that's integrating it into your life, right? If you've got one time a week, you can meet with a group and you're kind of reliving part of your experience in a way. Right? You'll pull that back.
Everything we do is what makes our life, right? Like even this 30 minutes talking here is 30 minutes that we both committed to, you know, hopefully help someone that's hearing it to find whatever's next for them.
Yeah, and absolutely. This is true. I was just thinking, I will... when this finishes, like tomorrow, I will take some time and I'll CC, I'll add people that should see this, my old guests. So I'll go through and I'll just add them into this and then you can kind of see who they are. And I'll just let them know that that's, you know, that you should talk.
Fantastic.
You're in the same space trying to do the same thing. Consolidate the energy.
Right.
And do more, right. And do more. Really, it's really interesting. So are you think you guys will be able to have like even like a workbook, or if you've got, what have you built this? Is there a foundation or like a system? Do you have a system built? And then is there a workbook that's going to follow? How do you kind of see this service developing?
Yeah. All things I would love to do that we just don't have the resources to do right now.
Yeah.
So right now it's really about continuing to work with partners, organizations, and help them out. And as we continue to do that and grow, I think we'll start to develop exactly like you said, resource guidebooks and networks of partnerships and, you know, discounts that nonprofits can give each other and ways to just kind of have everyone help each other. That's something I would love. And we're just not there yet. So soon.
But I could completely see that where you start to do some nice brand, you know, you can help people produce branded materials for their organization, right? For the warriors, you've got their own workbook and, you know, maybe it's slightly tweaked for veterans.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
You know, you could have different books tweaked for different kind of people.
Yeah. And a lot of things like that are out there. It's a matter of, you know, getting in front of people's eyes. Need to see it and, you know, having it in one place and making sure it's the quality that you would want in something like that.
This has been one of the outcomes for me on doing this show is been, Doug, what I've seen is this kind of, you know, I've got 110-ish meetings done. And I, you know, there's quite a few people who are in really the same exact space and don't know each other. And so I think this is an interesting, like, this is a great conversation for me. I really appreciate it. And that what you've done of bringing, you know, kind of being a little kind of little nexus and you're building this hub out. And I'm like, oh, you're kind of the guy I was kind of thinking I'm that in a way with this, because people come to the show and then they can kind of broadcast out, you know, but the reality is that message doesn't get out there. It's got to be, you know, you have to still, I hear your story now and I'm like, oh, now I know where to send. I know there's 20 people I can fix. At least I can connect 20 people that belong with together on the same path.
Yeah, that's the beauty of community and network. It's the mycelial app growing, connecting all the different nodes.
It's our little mycelium. This is our little mycelium.
Yeah.
We're growing a little, we got a little mycelium network. Maybe I'll change the name of the podcast.
The mycelium jar.
The mycelium jar. I like one. I need one of those. I need one of those. Yeah, I think we're about there. I got what I needed out of this, which is I now know what to do with some really good guests that I've interviewed, and I'm excited to share them with you and see this where, you know, to kind of see what happens. Doug, anything I missed? Anything you want to make sure that you get out there as far as a conversation or a talking point?
Yeah, if you're listening and you feel you're one of those people that there's positives to be made in connecting with me or our organization, then visit empathic.love. The name of the organization is an empathic society. Also, if you're looking for integration, one of the things we do have is a weekly breathwork integration circle. It's Thursday nights. I'm actually headed to it right after this.
Cool.
You can donate to the nonprofit and get access to those circles. And they're facilitated by Jonathan Schechter of Blue Magic Alchemy, awesome breathwork facilitator. And another opportunity to, you know, keep the intention and energy alive every week. Something I look forward to every week. Would love to hear from anyone that could use some integration in some part of their life or their organization's life.
Doug, thanks so much for sharing, being a guest. Thanks for what you're doing with Empathic. That's really beautiful work.
Thank you, Ken. Yeah. Thank you for this podcast and all that you're doing. It's important out there.
Yeah, it's how I want to capture. And I think, too, on the reverse, I'll ask anybody, you know, just have a thought on anybody you think that you'd like to lift up their message and let's get them on the show.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to connect with Jonathan now because I think he's an excellent candidate.
That's great. Again, and everybody listening, especially people listening on the audio versions, really appreciate you hanging out this long all the way to the end, even though it's a little short 30. Great conversation. And you can, you know, I think we've learned quite a bit about really how to deliver this in a way where it's not just a one-off, and like Doug says, and you can actually integrate this into your life really and get the coaching and the guidance. So thanks for listening all the way through. Make sure you drop down and give us some love notes at the bottom. Find it, give us a rating, ring the bell, make sure you get, you know, announcements and all that good stuff. Doug, hang around for 30 more seconds. I got a little commercial and I'll see you on the other side.
All right.
Thanks again, everybody.
Yeah, loose, baby.
But we're about to go and make this vessel with these great professionals in public glass. We're not part of the community, but we're from the outer family of glass blowing. Yeah, we're going to go make a magical giant jar with optic lenses so that if you turn it, it changes all the time. So if you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change.